You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. We hope that you're having a great Wednesday. Thank you so much for joining us. Another round of some thunderstorms, severe weather could hit the area later today on top of what we've already seen over the last couple of days. So please stay weather aware today. And of course, stay tuned to your local media. They'll keep you informed of what's going on in your area. I just also think, Brian, that it's funny because it's also Severe Weather Awareness Week. I don't know. Yes. Mother Nature has a weird sense of humor to me. But tomorrow at 1:45 and 6:45 p.m., there's going to be tornado drills across the state, which right now in the state of Wisconsin, we've heard our sirens going off. We know that they work at this particular juncture, but they will be testing those sirens in large in across the state tomorrow at 1:45 and 6:45. So don't worry about severe weather tomorrow at those times. It will simply just be a drill for Severe Weather Awareness Week.
All right.
Mother Nature. Well, timing. Weird timing, isn't it?
Well, you think you can explain me? I'll show you. I'm going to have more extreme storms, and then you could just look back at them and talk about
fickle.
What you should have done.
That's right.
Instead of, but yeah, I'm learning more. Being with you on this show and hearing about your storm chasing stuff and the weather stuff, I'm learning more about, I always paid attention, you know, like if I heard a siren go off, I'd go, ugh, or if the sky turned green and looked like the flying monkeys were about to arrive, I'd go in the basement. It's once you start living through more and more severe weather, you go, I really do need to pay attention.
I used to be terrified of severe weather. I got over my fear of severe weather the very first radio shift I had, where it was called Tornado Tuesday in South Dakota. 21 tornadoes hit the ground that day. And I was on the air through the entire thing from about 4 p.m. until, actually, I didn't leave until my shift ended the next day because I was the morning show. And so I was there from 4 p.m. until, I believe, 10 a.m. the very next day, covering severe weather and then the aftermath, because there was damage all across the state, as you can imagine, from 21 tornadoes.
There is something about being on the air during severe weather or during a crisis that it's like, all right, no, there's no joking now. This
you don't
is
have
serious
time to
business.
Think about
we get
yourself.
The people on there.
Yeah.
Right. And it's
your own
you
fears.
Go.
Yeah. Because there's people who need this information and you have it in front of you.
But I also think I might be a good storm chaser, only because I don't know any of the science, but I love to be like, I'll have the family in the basement and I'll be still standing on the deck watching this come in and going, oh, look at how the wind is blowing. Look at the color of the sky. Look at all this. And Debbie's screaming for the basement.
You
get
can
out
always
here quickly. Well,
I will tell you that as part of the Severe Weather Awareness Week, check with your local National Weather Service offices, because they do have spotter training courses. So
you
that
go,
you can
on a ride along.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, you go in and you learn all about what you're looking at, what those things in the sky are. It teaches you through one of the meteorologists at the National Weather Service. And then you can actually, when you have the training, you can actually call in confirmed reports to the National Weather Service when you're seeing things in your area.
So. One of my buddies just did that.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks. He was
did
very
he really?
Excited about it. Yeah.
It's very cool. It's a cool process. I've been through it a few times.
Oh, and then you
times.
Get shouted out on the news. Our storm spotter, Brian Noonan, called in.
That's right.
And he saw a bird. Brian, that's not what we're here for. Oh, all right. Well, that's.
I've been through spotter training a few different times for various reasons, and sometimes it's just to sharpen the skills again, especially over the years when I did chase more with my husband. So
now do you get a parking placard? Are there any benefits that come with this? Do I get a discount card at Subway?
I think you just get a certificate saying you went through the training.
Oh, a certificate's nice. Put it on my wall of achievements.
There you go.
Which is more like a back of a toilet door. But anyway. That's neither here nor there, because it's time to look at some headlines. Yeah. Let's start. We're so busy talking about the gerrymandering here in Wisconsin. We have not updated you on what's going on in Iran, so let's do that real quick. The president said that the war in Iran was, quote-unquote, very close to over. In clips of an interview that is set to air later today, he has declared a U.S. victory in Iran repeatedly since mere days after the war started, even as the reality on the ground has been far more complicated. But We're very close to over.
Okay. All right. It does. Yeah, okay. When I'm looking at the news and I'm seeing the headlines, it doesn't feel that way. It certainly doesn't look that way. And I'm not sure the other countries involved know that either. But
I don't think Iran knows that it's almost over.
No, I don't believe that that is the case. But, you know, this particular president, he likes to say that whatever comes out of his mouth is what is happening. So we'll go with that for today. But the other headlines are probably going to contradict a little bit of that. Speaking of which, U.S. Central Command said that it has achieved maritime superiority and that the blockade on Iranian ports has been had been fully implemented within 36 hours of its launch. That's at least according to a statement that they made on social media on Monday.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we have maritime superiority. Mediators' efforts to extend a ceasefire between the United States and Iran have made progress as the warring sides are expected to return soon to the table for another round of negotiations. Regional officials reported that mediators aim to extend the ceasefire, which is due to expire on April 22nd, for at least another 2 weeks. There's that time period again, to allow diplomacy another chance.
And finally, Vice President J.D. Vance is expected to lead another round of negotiations with Iranian officials should a meeting happen before the ceasefire expires next week. At least that's according to what sources have told CNN. President Donald Trump suggested talks could resume this week in Pakistan.
Well, we'll see what happens. That's some stuff you need to know, but there's always more stuff you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some sh** you need to know.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff you need to know. A major U.S. Postal Service union is launching a national TV ad campaign promoting voting by mail, stepping into a politically charged debate because skepticism about mail-in ballots has been raised once again by Donald Trump and others. But Donald Trump, again, the man who, what? Yes, votes by mail. Anyway, the 30-second message features a variety of voters, among them a busy farmer and a flight attendant, explaining why they cast their ballots by mail. Sponsored by the 200,000-member American Postal Workers Union, the advertising campaign announced yesterday that it will begin this week in Ohio, where Union Army soldiers during the Civil War cast the first mail-in ballots in 1864. There's a little tidbit that you might not have known. I did not know that, so take that to your next cocktail party and impress your friends and bore the people who don't like you anyway. The ad ends with the message, "Vote by mail, keep it, protect it, expand it." It comes 2 weeks after the president signed an executive order that seeks to create a nationwide list of verified eligible voters and subsequently bar postal workers from sending absentee ballots to those who are not on each state's approved list. The president of the Postal Workers Union said that the TV ad was produced before Trump's executive order was issued, not in response to it, which makes sense because it takes a long time to produce a commercial. So that part, I believe. And good for Listen, who says postal workers are just disgruntled and sometimes not doing their job? Not me.
No.
I say good for you, postal workers.
I mean, let's be realistic. There's going to probably be people within the Republican Party that are going to think that this is something political or some sort of...
it is political you have to keep...
But the messaging was not it was not intended to dispute the president of the United States. That's not what it was. It was to simply make sure that people understand that you can vote by mail, that it is a safe process, that it has been around for a really long time, and that when you do so, they're doing their best to make sure that your ballot is taken where it needs to be. That's what this is.
And it's really hard to talk against it when the head of your party and the president of the United States is doing it and his whole family is doing it. And their votes seem to count, right? They never complain that their ballots didn't make it in. If you start going too deep, your head will just start spinning.
We won't do that. Right. Just know that you might see this on your TV. And if you are a Republican voter, this had nothing to do with the president's executive order. It was done before to make sure that you just know that you can vote by mail. That's it.
Everything's
That's all
not
was done.
About you.
No,
it's everything is not about
sometimes
you.
Sometimes it's not about the political messaging. It's just to get a message across in general. In other stuff you need to know this morning, the Justice Department has now moved to dismiss the seditious conspiracy convictions of Proud Boys and Oath Keepers members as of yesterday, that is, undoing one of the Biden administration's most celebrated victories against those who said it inspired the January 6, 2021 attack on American democracy. Now, if a judge approves these dismissals, it would erase the most serious convictions from the sprawling investigation of the U.S. Capitol riot, one of the largest federal investigations in U.S. history. President Donald Trump has long lambasted the January 6 prosecutors as an injustice against his supporters, even referring to those in jail as hostages. On his first day in office, Trump issued pardons to over 1,000 people convicted in the attack, every defendant except for 14 people, each of whom had their sentences commuted. One of those people was pardoned in March 2025, and the department now says 12 others, 8 members and associates of the Oath Keepers, and 4 from the Proud Boys, should have their convictions completely dismissed. Now, dismissing the convictions would also be a major blow to the Biden Justice Department, which across 3 trials had argued that the attack on the U.S. Capitol was more than just a political protest that got out of control, but rather a violent attack on democracy and an effort to keep Joe Biden out of the Oval Office by any means necessary. That's because it was.
Yeah, listen, this is a horrible decision. It doesn't surprise me. If you thought the Justice Department was going to change and be less weaponized when Pam Bondi left, you were living in a dream world, because that did not happen. It will not happen until there is a change at the top. So I don't even want to rail against how stupid this is, because if you
Todd
don't see
Blanche was literally President Trump's personal attorney,
yes,
during the Jack Smith cases that went through the Florida courts. And Todd Blanche is now the acting U.S. attorney. So you shouldn't be surprised by this at all.
No. It's just, it's frustrating. It's infuriating. We all saw what happened. We all saw what went on there. If the fact that on his first day in office, he pardoned all those people is inexcusable, but what are you going to do now? You just wait and you see, and time proves itself out. How many of those people who had their convictions overturned who got their pardons are back in jail for other reasons?
Yeah.
It's just, okay, we have bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
These guys, karma will catch up with these guys and figure out they'll either end up back in jail or something. So there you go. Finally, in other union news, the state's largest teachers union is backing State Senator Kelda Royce for governor. This is a key endorsement because of how crowded the Democratic candidates are. There's 7 of them. The endorsement from the Wisconsin Education Association Council, which says it represents tens of thousands of educators and school staff in public schools and technical college, could give Roy's campaign a boost after trailing Democratic primary opponents in recent statewide polls. In a statement, the union president, Peggy Wirtz Olson, said Roy's, quote, is a leader who has done her homework on solutions to the school funding crisis, and she has a broad, deep base of knowledge in labor and Wisconsin public education. She has a great track record of collaboration and responsiveness, and she has proven that she wants to listen, learn, and partner with public school professionals. The Roy's campaign called the endorsement a game changer. And if you want to hear our interview with Kelda Royce, go to civicmedia.us, click on the Daybreak tab. It's right there, and you can listen to what she told us about all of that. All right, when we come back, what do you need to know about a new homeless shelter that is opening in Wausau? We'll get to it. This is Daybreak on the Civic.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are with us. If you want to get involved in the program, we'd love to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's how you text. That's how you call. Listen, we got to get some calls in. I love that everybody's texting.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. I love that people are commenting on the YouTube and Facebook channels. That is always great. We appreciate your input. But Parker sits there looking forlorn. And Parker's a good guy. You can call and talk to him. He won't yell at you unless you really give him a reason to. Like if you're rude, he's going to hang up on you. You'll never get to us. But if you're nice to him, you get to us. That's how it works. And just, say hi
easy
to Parker.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, compliment him on something.
I sit here listening to them all morning. Somebody talk to me, please.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
No.
Truth bomb.
Much love. Much love.
Yes.
Out of the mouths of babes. Oh, my
God. I got to say,
goodness.
I respect it. It's fine. I totally
it's
respect
true.
It.
Parker, you said the quiet part out
that's
loud.
That's right.
We all,
that's right.
If it's not going through all of our heads, then we're lying.
That's right.
Anyway, so there's been big shakeups in the homelessness system in Wisconsin in 2026. In Madison alone, Porch Lights closed in one of their locations. They're opening a new facility, but it's capped at 250 beds. They don't have that flexible drop-in model. It just means that maybe some people are going to get turned away when you have a hard count instead of just, come and go, whatever. The Dairy Drive encampment in Madison is expected to be shut down in northeast Wisconsin. NewCap is closing multiple shelters in Green Bay and Shawano. But 134 families are at risk of losing housing. Jamie, it's looking rough, but Wausau is making a little change.
They are, absolutely. They are actually opening the Bridge Street Mission in the midst of all of these other closures, including the ones we've seen in Rhinelander, Chippewa Falls, Green Bay. They are opening this new shelter with about 40 beds for men and 20 for women. They're also going to have a few private rooms, and this mission will also connect people to meals, daytime services, and addiction recovery programs. Of course, the caveat here is that it only has 60 beds, so this shelter might not actually meet the demand of the homeless population in the area. Now, I find this story fascinating because where we're seeing a lot of these shelters have to close down all across the state, Bridge Street Mission is literally stepping in where a lot of other organizations couldn't. And this shelter only exists, Brian, because there was no other organization that would actually respond when the city and county reached out for some help. The new space is designed to be more than just a place for people to sleep. It's going to be a structured environment focused on stability and recovery, not just overnight stays. And it's going to actually replace a temporary shelter that was being run by the Wausau Police Department, which had been operating out of a church for almost a year. They're going to have some built-in features to address some of the community concerns, including a covered entry and indoor waiting space, so that you won't see people necessarily always waiting outside. It's also going to be connected to a day center, and that is where people can go to get meals, where they can go to stay warm, and they can connect with services during the day. And it also ties into longer-term programs like the Men's Recovery Center, and they also are planning on a Women's Recovery Center, which is going to emphasize accountability and some of the next steps, encouraging people to really engage in the recovery or support programs that are being offered. Now, this is also fascinating because this shelter was added into another project midway through because the community understood that there was a crisis in the town of Wausau. So local donors and businesses ended up stepping in. They helped fund this entire program, and it was pretty clear that there was no solution. So they donated all the finances. However, like a lot of these instances, which is probably why we're seeing other facilities close, the financial reality is really tough, even for the Bridge Street Mission. Operating costs have already tripled. The organization expects them to even double by the end of this year. On top of the triple, so now we're talking, I don't even know what, that's fifth. I can't even do that. I know quadruple, and that's where it stops. Quintuple, there we go. Government support is temporary and decreasing. Public funding starts at about $350,000, and it's going to decrease each year. So this is really going to become a community effort, and the reason that the Bridge Street Mission is going to continue to exist is because it's going to have to rely on community donations. they are accepting donations right now. If anybody's in the area listening or anywhere in the state and you just want to help them out, bridgestreetmission.org is where you can go. But, you know, I do find this fascinating because we do have a crisis here in this state mm-hmm. with the homeless population. And while we're seeing all of these other facilities have to close, I find it commendable that the folks in Wausau stepped up and were like, we have a real problem. We need to do something.
Well, I think in the future, this is the model that's going to have to be followed, because just look in your own home. Groceries going up, electric bills going up, staffing. If you have a business, staff, everything costs more. And when you're based on a nonprofit model, that's tough. So you are going to need community involvement. You're going to need local business involvement. And listen, I don't care why businesses or people donate. I don't care if it's because, well, I just don't want to see people laying on the street. Well, good. None of us should want to see people laying on the street. And if you're doing it for optics, whatever. Okay, just give the money, because there has to be a place. And what I like about this this project in Wausau is there are programs. It's not just here's a place to come in and sleep. Yeah, here's a place to come in and sleep. Here's also a place that during the day you can get can get help on a number of different levels.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be out. Remember last month when it got so cold and all along State Street, those people, poor people sleeping out in the doorways? You don't have to do that. And the community should want that.
Yeah.
No matter how you feel about why people are homeless or whatever it is, homeless people exist, or unhoused people. I don't want to trigger any people getting mad at me. But we all need to pitch in a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the less pressure we can put on our communities and help more people, the better our communities and the stronger they are. It's 8:29 right now. We hope you're having a great morning. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We'll talk to Brittany Carloni from Wisconsin Watch about gerrymandering after this on the Civic Media Network.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
We hope that your morning is going well so far. It is 8:35 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. We talked about this a little bit last hour, but yesterday, state Republicans said they're leaving the door open, quote, to continue meaningful dialogue with Democratic Governor Tony Evers on his call to ban partisan gerrymandering in Wisconsin. Well, gerrymandering has been around and been an issue in Wisconsin for more than a decade, since legislative maps were implemented to favor Republican candidates. Political analysts viewed Wisconsin's district boundaries as some of the most partisan designed in the country. Joining us to talk about the timing of the Republican announcement and what it might mean going forward for Wisconsin is Brittany Carloni. She is the state government and political reporter for Wisconsin Watch, and she joins us again. Welcome back, Brittany. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
All right. For me, and I think for a lot of people, it seems a little coincidental that the Republicans would make this announcement a week after getting shellacked in the Supreme Court election, and with the number of high-profile Republicans who are now either retiring or not seeking re-election or whatever. Is that what it felt like when you were in the Capitol yesterday, that it's all like, oh, we're in trouble, we better do something about it?
I mean, that's a great point. I think if you look at the wins this year that are really at the backs of Democrats, not only in Wisconsin, like last week's Supreme Court election, if you look across the country, the way that Democrats, even at the tail end of 2025, are really just being dominant in races across the country. I think even at the start of 2026, folks were looking at these races that we have in our state this year and saying, hey, like, this is going to be potentially a very good year for Democrats. But I also think, like, some of the energy in the Capitol yesterday, a lot of us were, especially in the press corps, were expecting this is going to be a gavel in and gavel out situation like it's been in the last 8 years. And the fact that they left the session open was a very unusual move, because if you look back in these last 8 years, topics that Tony Evers has said, hey, I want you to do something about abortion, I want you to do something about gun rights, these are topics that would not really land well with Republican bases and Republican base voters. And there might be some conversations. I don't know them yet at this point, but there might be some conversations among Republicans looking at their communities and saying, hey, based on the way Democrats might be really successful this year, we need to do something so that way if Democrats come into power and redraw those maps in after the 2030 census, they don't have what happened to them, or they don't have, Republicans don't have what happened in 2011 when the maps were drawn to favor them, but it's the opposite. Right. So yeah, it was interesting.
When a session stays open like this, and I'm hearing that they're going to be meeting again on Thursday. Is that correct?
That's
the tentative plan.
My understanding at this point is that is potentially a tentative plan. I haven't yet heard anything from Republicans about a specific agenda or something going forward. Sometimes I wonder if they say a date and something doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So that was a question I was asking folks yesterday, is like, is that for real? What should we be expecting? So I'm going to be still on top of if something comes forward.
With an open session like this, are there any pressure points that are going to force any action, or could they just sit here indefinitely saying that it's still just open?
That's something I was hearing yesterday too, is like, this could go either way. Republicans could come back at some point and say, like, hey, we left it open in good faith. And Governor Evers even yesterday said, like, there's nothing to negotiate on this going forward. We don't have – it's a very simple amendment that he proposed. And so it could be that yesterday was a messaging move to say, like, hey, we were interested in this. We want to keep negotiating. The governor said no. Or there might actually be some kind of action that comes forward. And that's going to be the really interesting thing that comes forward in the next couple of weeks, maybe even months. Speaking to the Legislative Reference Bureau yesterday, as long as the session remains open, they can come back and do something at some point, but it has to stay within the bounds of like the topic that Governor Evers put forward in his executive order in March.
Well, I wanted to ask you that, Brittany, because you were covering the governor yesterday when he said there was no room to negotiate. And as I thought about this, I was like, all right, well, then who has leverage here? Because the Republicans know they have to try to get this done, even if it's not a sure thing that things are going to go the Democrats' way in November, but it's looking that way. And also, neither one have leverage because Governor Evers is going to be gone, Robin Voss is going to be gone, LeMahieu is going to be gone. Mm-hmm. So usually in a tactic like this, somebody has an edge. From your vantage point, where's the edge in this debate?
That's a great question. My understanding is there could be some conversations still happening at this point about what to do about that $2.5 billion surplus. And to have some sort of action in the legislature at this point, Governor Evers would have to expand the scope of this special session, or the legislature would have to say, hey, we're going to come back for an extraordinary session, which is where the legislature can actually control the types of things that get passed. And so my expectation in some of the conversations I've been having with people at this point is maybe that there's some leverage for Republicans when it comes to how that $2.5 billion surplus is spent. And they, back in February and March, when the lawmakers were still in session, there were conversations about, do we do a rebate? Do we have some sort of property tax relief? Is there something to do with the 400-year veto? And I have a feeling that at this point will probably be what the leverage is, as far as Republicans want these things. Governor Evers has wanted more support and financial support for schools, and he wants this partisan gerrymandering ban. So that's where I'm seeing maybe some puzzle pieces are being moved around at this point.
We're talking with Brittany Carlone. She is the state government and politics reporter over at Wisconsin Watch, wisconsinwatch.org. If Republicans truly want to move on this, right, whether this is a negotiating tactic, whether, they actually truly want to end gerrymandering, what are you hearing would be a concrete step that they would need to make? What are Democrats saying would be the olive branch that they would need to basically throw out there?
So what was interesting yesterday, and I was in the Senate for most of the day yesterday. I was bouncing back and forth between both chambers as we were waiting to see what kind of happened.
Sure.
And in the Senate yesterday, Senate Minority Leader Dianne Hesselbein, who represents the Middleton area, she was basically saying, hey, as Senate Democrats, we really like what the governor has put forward. It's a very simple two-sentence amendment that says, hey, we're not going to draw maps that favor or don't favor any specific political party, and that partisan gerrymandering is banned. And she also addressed the fact that there's just been no conversations at this point between Democrats and Republicans.
Wow.
So Republican lawmakers didn't take any questions yesterday, and I think I saw maybe three of them over the across both chambers as I was going back and forth. So I feel like at this point they actually have to get to the table and start talking to each other, and that might be a challenge at this point. It sounds like these conversations are really early, despite the fact that Governor Evers signed that executive order in early March. So it will be very interesting to see if they come to the table and start having conversations, what that even looks like going forward.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Because when he signed this order, we all kind of assumed that they weren't coming back. Mm-hmm. That's just how it goes. Under this proposal that the governor has put forward, no gerrymandering of maps would be allowed. Would the maps still be redrawn every 10 years as they are now, or would it, whatever the map is now, stay? How does that actually work?
Yeah, so basically, even just without this context of what's happening right now, maps have to be drawn every 10 years once the federal census is conducted. And so the one weird wiggle room in that is, in these last couple of years, the court challenges against the state's legislative maps and congressional maps based on we mentioned this at the top of the segment, talking about how the state's maps were really drawn to advantage Republicans. Yeah. And the courts said, yes, absolutely not. This is not what's going to happen. And so the state's legislative maps were redrawn after the Supreme Court struck them down in late 2023 and Governor Evers signed the new maps in 24. And so this is where we're seeing a lot more redrawings of maps lately, because courts have said, hey, this is not fair. Like, this is not how this should go. But the next time legislative maps would actually have to be redrawn, unless something absolutely bananas happens in the court system or right, like a legal challenge happens, would be in after the 2030 census. The one situation we have still kind of like hanging out there at this point are the congressional maps, and those are still making their way through that three-judge panel, and there's still questions about what the Wisconsin Supreme Court might do with those, but my understanding is there won't be a decision, and we won't have new congressional maps before the midterms.
One of the things that I keep going back to is when Governor Evers proposed this special legislation during his State of the State, mm-hmm, even Democrats seemed a little skeptical. Mm-hmm. Is that changing now that there was this 20-point win by Chris Taylor just a week ago? Are they more on board? How much is that actually shaking up what the Democrats are feeling and what might be playing into the Republicans' decision-making?
That's a very good question. And I actually asked some of the Democratic candidates for governor about this last week in the wake of the Chris Taylor win.
Yep.
And I asked the question, I was like, should this even be a priority at this point, given the way that election went and the way that the midterms are like, hey, this is going to be potentially a good year for Democrats. And all seven of the top candidates told me that we don't like how the state, and especially under Republican leadership when it was the trifecta with Governor Scott Walker and then the Republicans in the legislature, they said, we do not like how that went. That was not fair to voters. And we would like to see some version of this going forward. The leadership in the Capitol, I thought it was interesting yesterday, Dianne Hesselbein, when she took questions, answered a question about the fact that she was not super gung-ho about it when when that executive order got signed. And she said, I just needed time to really look at the amendment and have conversations. And she said that if there was anything that was brought to the floor yesterday, that Senate Democrats would have been able to pass that, like they had the votes to pass that. In the Assembly, Greta Neubauer and Assembly Democrats did not actually have like a press conference, so we weren't able to ask questions necessarily about that in a big group setting, but it sounds like there was some movement among Democrats leading up to yesterday.
Brittany Carloni is the state government and politics reporter for Wisconsin Watch. WisconsinWatch.org is the website. You mentioned you asked the question to the Democratic candidates for governor. What about the one Republican candidate for governor? What did Tom Tiffany, did he have any comments about this?
Yeah, he said that he still supports the legislature drawing the maps, and he would want Tom Tiffany to, Tom Tiffany would want Governor Evers to propose something nonpartisan.
All right.
Well, isn't that what he? It's right in the word.
That's what this is, right?
That there would be no.
Yeah,
it's right there. All right. Well.
So I mean, we've only got a few seconds left. About 30 seconds. What do you think is the next step? What do you think we see happen over the next couple of days here as they continue to keep this session open?
I think we might see some kind of potentially some kind of conversation with the governor, seeing if some of these like negotiations move forward. I wonder if we also hear something about that surplus.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll see. Well, if you want to hear what's happening, follow Brittany Carloni on Wisconsin Watch, wisconsinwatch.org. Always a pleasure, Brittany. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks
Sounds
for
good.
Being here today.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, have you ever been swayed to buy something because of a trend? This is a product I've never heard of. Maybe you haven't either, but we'll talk about it after this. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your Wednesday. Thank you so much for joining us on Tax Day. Hopefully you've already taken care of that so you don't have to worry about it by 11:59 p.m. this evening, by the way. Make sure those taxes are filed or get your extension ready to go. One of the two.
There you go.
It is Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Have you ever been swayed to buy something because of a trend, whether online or just IRL, as the kids like to say,
yes,
in real life? Is that what the kids say, Parker?
Well done, Brian. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you. I do try to live IRL. Well, I'm asking this because we found this story. And, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's how you answer the question. Maybe you bought some. I don't usually give into trends, but I have bought a couple things based on ads that have popped up on my Instagram feeds.
Sure.
Not immediately, but if I see, you know, because once you like
it's gotta sway
forget
me.
It, you're going to see it all the time. And then, it's in my mind. I begin. So I bought a couple things that way, which thankfully I've been happy for. But Jamie, maybe you're familiar with this because you homeschooled the boys. And there was a time when fidget spinners became a big thing. Do you remember the fidget spinners?
In fact, I will be honest, my 19-year-old still has numerous fidget spinners because that he just keeps in his hand. He has ADHD and anxiety. And so fidget spinners are a really great way for him to calm his mind, let him concentrate a little bit more because he constantly has that stimulation then in his hand. And it literally makes, you can tell the instant when he needs to calm down and think about something in a different manner because he'll grab something. He always grabs something and he'll just have it in his hand and then he logically goes through the process. He thinks it through and then he's done with his fidget spinner. But yes, fidget spinners, to your point, were very much a big trend, but we still use them in our house. They are still very trendy.
And a lot of people do it without having, like I pick
without
up a pen
divide,
and I'll twirl my pen around and I'll do, you know, people do that kind of stuff. Well, fidget spinners started off with a real purpose.
Uh-huh.
Like you explained the real purpose for them. And then they became a nuisance for every teacher in the world.
Yes.
Then there were other sensory things that came out for another good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But then kids who didn't need them for that reason wanted them because they were like, well, how come they get to use it? So now there's a new one.
Yes.
That's out. Called Nedo.
I had to look this up.
N-E-D-O-H. Nedo is getting people as crazy as the old Beanie Baby craze.
Yes.
People want to have these Nedos. Now, they've been around for about 10 years. And basically what a Nedo is, and this is probably, but imagine a bar of soap if a bar of soap was really squishy.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it is. They come in all kinds of colors that says Nedo on there. And they're just for...
They're
like those old worry balls.
Yeah.
Or the little hand exerciser. I'm going way back in time now.
Yes.
Or the little thing that looked like a tongs that you would squeeze to get your hands stronger.
I'm over.
So
on
that's
the,
what's NIDOR.
I'm over on the website right now, and the official definition from NIDO: gratifying, super soft, super stretchy, dough-filled, groovy blob that started a squish sensation. Squeeze it, pull it, smush it, and then watch it return to its original shape. That's
Hang
the
on.
Official
that's
definition.
That's my bio for the station. So I don't know who stole my bio.
Soothing way to the best mellow and chill is what the website says. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Well, sure. It makes sense, right? That who doesn't want to be mellow and chill? John in Oshkosh says, my nine-year-old looks for that NIDO every time we go to any store. He's listening on WISS. Frank, you're nodding. Do you know, are you
a
NIDO?
I have a story.
Please.
Okay.
NIDO story. You have a NIDO story.
My
That's
niece.
NIDO.
Niece has wanted one for a long time, so my mother-in-law found one at Target and bought her one, and she was so excited. So her little brother said, can I see it for a second? And he's like five. She's like, fine, but don't do anything. Don't do anything to it. So he takes it, squeezes it, takes a pencil, and stabbed it.
Oh.
Within, she had it for minutes. And he ruined it.
These aren't exactly cheap. They're anywhere between $5 to $30, according to the website.
$30?
Yeah.
Life size?
Yeah. I don't know.
Now,
really?
Here's where I come into play. Because there's different shapes, right?
Oh, wait. This story isn't over, Frank?
Oh, my gosh. Sorry. Go ahead.
So my wife and I were in Michigan, where they live, the following weekend. And my mother-in-law is like, we have to go to the store and find these NIDOs. And I said, cool. I'm always down for a hunt.
Cool. Is there bourbon in them, Frank?
I wish. She goes, we're going to go. There's this new toy store down the street.
Toy store?
We can go there. And I was like, all right, whatever. We walk in. And it is a retro toy store that is filled with, like, old toys from my childhood.
Which
I walked in and said, this isn't good. This isn't good. And my wife sees and looks around and sees, like, old Power Ranger and old Pokemon stuff and goes, Mom, we need to leave. She goes, well, we're just here to get the Nidos. She goes, no, he cannot be in here.
She knew your man cave would be decked out in all sorts of things, didn't she?
Yes, and I'm the kind of person where I want to look at the cool stuff on the top shelves with the big price tags.
Yeah.
So I restrain myself.
Nobody needs the buck dollar bin down on the bottom for that stuff. You want that?
No. So I will be back.
Okay.
I thought the NIDO was just that square, the cube. No, you're right, Jamie. They have all kinds of NIDOs.
You can get
from
all
chicks
sorts
and balls.
It's crazy. The only thing I knew about a NIDO before talking about it today is I've seen these social media TikTok videos primarily of people like basically doing the old school stab them with the box cutter to get a NIDO when the new shipments get into stores. That's how fast these are going off shelves, which is absolutely crazy. You know, you saw those old stories when we used to shop on Black Friday in the stores where people were literally attacking each other. That's what people are doing over these NIDOs.
Well, wasn't the last one the Stanley Cups? That was the was the last one where moms were trying to get the pink Stanley Cup at Target, and they were fighting each other.
Buy a Yeti.
Think for yourself, folks. Think for yourselves, and you know, good
I
luck.
Get it.
I guess if you're hunting NIDOs, I will not be, so I'm not going to be in your way. I will be back tomorrow with Jamie, hopefully, and we will be doing the show again. But for now, I'm done.
That's what we're told, anyway. We'll be back tomorrow. It's 8:59. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of Daybreak.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.